So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 11, Calculation of Time from the Atom, Texts 30 and 31. Translation: the devastation takes place due to the fire emanating from the mouth of Sankarsana, and thus great sages like Bhrigu and other inhabitants of Maharloka transport themselves to Janaloka, being distressed by the warmth of the blazing fire which rages through the three worlds below. Text 31. Tavatri vivanam sadhya kapandai tittasan sindavaha plavayant yutaktatopa chandavataritarmaya. At the beginning of the devastation, all the seas overflow and hurricane winds blow very violently. Thus the waves of the seas become ferocious, and in no time all the three worlds are full of water. Purport: it is said that the blazing fire from the mouth of Sankarsan rages for 100 years of the demigods, or 36,000 human years. And then for another 36,000 years, there are torrents of rain accompanied by violent winds and waves, and the seas and oceans overflow. These reactions of 72,000 years are the beginning of the partial devastation of the three worlds. People forget all these devastations of the worlds and think themselves happy in the material progress of civilization. This is called Maya, or that which is not. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Bhirijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shcha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschadjadishatarine. When I first looked over this purport, I was seeing how this amazing thing was coming out of the mouth of Sankarsan. And I was thinking that how Prabhupada would pray that his words could have potency. And I was thinking that I must also pray, because here we see I'm the das of Sankarsan, and from his mouth came this powerful fire that ravaged practically the whole universe. So the preacher prays that, you know, who am I? What am I? What is my realization? I'm practically not even a devotee, but here I am preaching and trying to convince people to take up Krishna consciousness, trying to make a difference in the world. So the preacher, he can pray, "My dear Lord, please bless me that these words that I'm speaking in your glorification may have some effect to actually make a difference in the world." That was the first thing that came to mind when I read about this blazing fire from the mouth of Sankarsan. Prabhupada makes a very nice point here. He says that the people forget about these devastations. Of course, the general population don't even know about them, but there are so many other devastations going on every day in the world. There's so many devastations. Just like they hear in Australia, they had that incident in Sydney with that terrorist in the cafe. You know, there's so many devastations going on all the time, all over the planet. But we like to ignore them and think we can just enjoy it. It's like a paradise here, is it? So we really have to become sober and realize this is not a place of happiness. It's really a place of misery. We imagine that it's happy because that's our nature, anandamayo vyasat. The nature of a living entity is he's always joyful. So when you put a joyful person in a place where there is no joy at all, after some time he's going to start imagining that it's joyful. I've many times given the example, there was one book written by Richard Farina, a novel. I didn't read the book, but the title was very poignant, actually, in terms of our philosophy. The title was, "I've been down so long, it looks like up to me." So the living entity is cast into such a suffering situation, you see, for such a period of time, he starts to imagine that it's happiness. You see, it's called maya sukaya, illusory happiness. So it's really important we become sober and realize that this material world is not really a happy place. It's a nasty place, very nasty place. Because as long as we think there's some happiness here, we won't feel that impetus to go back to Godhead. We'll think, well, it's not so bad here, I can enjoy. So it's very, very important we have this firm, determined, fixed consciousness that yes, this material world is not a place for a gentleman, as Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati confirms. It's not a place where I can be really happy. There's nothing really here for me, except for one thing, and that is the facility to become self-realized. Now, that's a very valuable thing. In the Kali Yuga, it's actually easier. If you look at it from the perspective of self-realization, we are in the right place at the right time. This is, for self-realization purposes, it's an ideal situation, especially this planet. In the heavenly planets, there's so much enjoyment, people become bewildered by the enjoyment. They forget about self-realization. In the lower planets, it's such a hellish nightmare. It's just like all they can do is think about surviving it every minute. It's like being an animal in constant fear of your life. But on this planet, we have enough suffering and enough enjoyment to kind of put you in a place where you can peacefully cultivate self-realization, if that's what you desire. So we should really be intelligent, we should really wise up and take advantage of this facility we have now to come to the self-realization platform. Take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, and become initiated disciples of the bona fide spiritual master, become obedient to the bona fide spiritual master. These are the three pillars described in the Nectar Devotion, the whole foundation of the self-realization process. Shelter, initiation, and obedience. We should take these very seriously, because by doing so, we actually progress out of the darkness of ignorance into the light of transcendental knowledge, into the light of prema bhakti, eventually manifests in the heart. So one has to patiently, enthusiastically, and confidently, and determinedly follow this pathway on a daily basis, never losing one's enthusiasm. Even if you don't feel the enthusiasm, go ahead and act enthusiastically as if you were enthusiastic, and the enthusiasm will come immediately back. Someone might say, well, that's artificial. Prabhupada told someone, he said, even if you don't feel the ecstasy to dance, dance and the ecstasy will come. You see? It's not artificial because it's already there. You already have bhakti within your heart, you see. Just like within the match, the fire is already present. All you have to do is strike it and the fire comes out again. So you have the fire of pure bhakti within your heart. Jivara Swarupa Hai Krishnara Nitya Das. You're actually a pure devotee. You're actually one of Krishna's associates from the spiritual sky. You don't belong here. Stop dreaming that you have a place here. This is not your place. You're an inhabitant of the spiritual world. So you have to come out of the madness of bodily consciousness. You have to come out of the contamination of lust, anger, and greed, and come back to your original identity, which is just oozing with unlimited nectar and happiness and bliss and knowledge and love. You have to come back to that. That's it. That's the whole bhakti yoga process, is how to become resituated in your original constitutional nature. Sarvapadiva nirmuktam tatpadadvena nirmalam lishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchate. Give up these false designations. Give up this contamination of the heart. Become restored back to your original identity, in which you engage your senses in this mass, in the service of the master of the senses, Rishikesha. That is devotional service. You see, Rupa Goswami is telling us. He's pointing the way. We are called Rupanugas, our followers in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. He was directly instructed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that knowledge has been passed on through the disciplic succession, through our beloved Srila Prabhupada, down to us. So we will take advantage of the science of bhakti, always absorbing ourselves in the transcendental name, fame, forms, pastimes, entourage, paraphernalia, etc., 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 that all beautiful, all powerful, all renounced, all wealthy, all famous, and all wise person named Krishna, who is standing in the bank at Keshi Ghat playing the fifth note on the flute during the full moon night of the Sharad season, attracting the gopis. Then we're going to be okay, you see. We're going to be okay. But the trouble is, we're thinking, no, no. I have my friends, I have my family, I have this, I have that. I can't really fully become Krishna conscious right now. Later, you see. But that gopi girl, she didn't think later. She was told by another gopi, Smaran mangi trayabhachitam sachi vishtirna drishtim vangsinastha kishalam ujvazam kandakena. She was told by the other gopi girl, she said, my dear gopi girlfriend, if you have any attraction to society, friendship, and love in this world, then don't you dare get anywhere near Keshi Ghat tonight. Because it's a full moon of the Sharad season, and there's a beautiful boy named Krishna, and he's standing there with a threefold bending form, putting his flute to his lips, which is just like newly blossomed twigs. His transcendental body is shining very brightly in the moonlight. Don't you dare get close to that place. If you do, you forget about society, friendship, and love. So what did that gopi girl do? She made a beeline for Keshi Ghat. Forget society, friendship, and love. I'm going to see that beautiful boy, Krishna. You see? So we have to follow in the footsteps of that gopi who made the beeline for Keshi Ghat, you see. I just want to see that beautiful boy, Krishna. I just want to become his devotee. I want to give up every other thing and just be a devotee of that beautiful boy, that charming, attractive person. I just want to be captured by him. That's all. That's all I want. I just want to be captured by him. Forget about everything else. To hell with everything else. I just want to be captured by Krishna, you see. That is Krishna consciousness. So we have to come to that platform of just wanting to be captured by Krishna, captivated by his charms, his beautiful lotus eyes, his amazing eyebrows, beautiful hair, his beautiful lotus toes. Everything about him is sparkling with unlimited effulgence and wonder. So we have to just get back to that Krishna, who is actually the source of our very existence. We are actually emanating from Krishna at every minute. We don't exist independently of Krishna. Nothing exists independently of Krishna. Everything is simply Krishna's manifestation. Well, somebody then asks, well, why does Krishna exist? Or how does Krishna exist? By his own sweet will. That's all. Krishna exists because he wants to exist. And he exists in the way that he wants to exist, for his own sweet will. He doesn't have to report to anybody else. Of course, he does play the role of being a disciple, purporting to Sandipani Muni and to his Guru Mata also, the wife of Sandipani Muni. He plays that role as a pastime. It's a pleasure pastime. But actually, he has no duties to perform. He's simply there to enjoy. He is supreme enjoyer. Bhaktaram nagatapasam sarvalokamaheshvaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shachamrichtati. One who knows me as the supreme enjoyer, the supreme owner, and the best friend of all living entities can achieve peace, and nobody else can do it. Do you want peace? Do you want to achieve a state of pure bliss, of pure happiness? Then there's no other way you can do it except by fully surrendering yourself to Krishna, giving up everything that stands in the way of Krishna bhakti. Throw it away. Get rid of it. You see, anything that's an impediment that's blocking you from achieving pure devotional service, kick it out with boot. Get it out. Get it out of your heart. You see, get it out of your heart. You don't want it there, you want to get it out. Tat padadvena nirmalam, you see. It's called nirmalam. It's called malam, the dirt, and nirmalam means no dirt. You see. We must come to nirmalam, no dirt in the heart. No lust, no anger, no greed, no badness, no illusion, no envy. That's Krishna consciousness. Nothing and nothing to purchase except Krishna, Prabhupada says. I have no other desire except Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So there's some questions, you can pass them on up. What is your message for ISIS? I heard they want to attack India. Actually, ISIS wants to take over the whole world. They want to make all of us into fanatical Muslims. They would love to take over Australia, the U.S. They'd love to take over the whole world. So what would be my message? If I could sit down for a talk with the leader of ISIS, that would be an interesting... Of course, if I would even survive, I probably might be. They might torture me, you know, light me on fire and burn me to death alive, to make a point. But if I were able to have a talk with him, I would say, I would just try to ask him what is his understanding of love of God, of devotion to Allah. I would come in a philosophical platform with him. What is your idea of how to please Allah? I would begin from that point and take it from there and see where it goes. Okay, how do we be enjoyed by Krishna and his devotees instead of trying to enjoy separately? That means you do that which pleases the spiritual master. Chaturvidhashi Bhagavat Prashada Yasha Prashada Nagati Katopi Dayanustivam Tasajirashi Sanjam. You see, you have to just see what's there in the Shiksha, the Gravastakam prayers. By taking prashadam, the spiritual master is pleased. So that's the first thing you have to do. Don't take foodstuffs unless they're prasadam, offered to Krishna. So that's the first thing. The spiritual master is pleased, Krishna is pleased when you take prasadam, they're pleased when you chant Hare Krishna. If you will absorb yourself in the activities of devotional service as described in the Nectar Devotion, then you know that you're doing which pleases Krishna. How do we stay happy when we are faced with so much pain and misery in this material world? You dance on it, just like, as I was explaining yesterday, Krishna danced on the hoods of Kali, a serpent. So whatever pain and misery is there, you just dance on it. You celebrate Krishna consciousness, dancing on all the pains and miseries of material life. Now, not in terms of others' pain and misery, you should be very sympathetic. I'm talking about your own pain and misery. You just dance on it. You take it as a blessing. Don't become bewildered by it. Use it as a Instead of a stumbling block, use it as a stepping stone to increase your Krishna consciousness. And then you will not have any anxiety in your life because everything you utilize to advance in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada gives the example of a businessman, an expert businessman. No matter what the market, sometimes in the U.S. they call it a bear market or a bull market, up or down market, on the stock market. So the expert businessman, if the prices go up, he sells. The prices go down, he buys. Mm-hmm. No matter what the market is doing, he's always expanding his business. He's becoming wealthier and wealthier every day by playing the market intelligently. So a devotee is just like that, you see. When there's happiness, he uses that to increase his Krishna consciousness. I don't deserve this, but Krishna has blessed me with this happiness. Let me take the enthusiasm I get in this happy mood and increase my service. And if some misery comes, Krishna is reminding me that this is not my home. My only shelter is his lotus feet. So in this way, the devotee takes everything, the good, the bad, the beautiful, the ugly, he takes absolutely everything and funnels it into his pathway of spiritual awakening. So there's no such thing as misery for a devotee. He's always blissful. Misery makes him more blissful, and bliss makes him more blissful. You see? He utilizes everything to become more and more blissful at every minute. This is called Brahma-Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochati Nakankshati. We have to come off the neophyte platform and come to this Brahma-Bhuta stage, you see. But there's no such thing as anxiety. It doesn't exist anymore, you see. The word anxiety just drops out of his dictionary, you see, when he reaches a stage of steadiness in devotional service. Okay, please give me some practical tips on how we can overcome our tendency to fault finding. No, you should increase your fault finding on yourself. Prabhupada said, strict with yourself and lenient with others. You should be a heavy-duty fault finder of yourself. That's the key. And you should appreciate the good in others. Prabhupada gives the example. He says there's the honeybee, and there's the fly, you see. Prabhupada said everyone has a combination of good and bad qualities, but the person who's like a fly, he just looks for the faults, and the devotee, he's like a honeybee, just looks for the good qualities. Does Krishna speak the Bhagavad Gita to each of the manus involved in the day of Lord Brahma? I don't know. I can't say. It doesn't mention that in the Gita. It just says one manu he spoke it to. But in another sense, yes, Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita to everybody. He's speaking it to you also. The Bhagavad Gita is actually spoken to every single jiva soul in this material existence. What is the justification of pilgrimage to Vrindavan when Melbourne Temple itself is like Vrindavan? Well, Prabhupada actually was discussing, they started the Mayapur Vrindavan festival back during Prabhupada's time on this planet. I remember Brahmananda, he said, but Prabhupada, it takes so much money to go to India. And Prabhupada said, well, you're spending so much money for eating. So actually Vrindavan is in Mayapur, very special places. Krishna is actually still there engaged in his pastimes. Lord Chaitanya is still doing his Gaura Leela. They're still going on in Navadvipa. And Krishna is still having his pastimes. They're going on right now in Vrindavan for those who have the eyes to see them. So you go there not in the mood of a tourist. You see, don't waste your money going as a tourist. You have to go as a pilgrim. You have to go there and you have to beg your spiritual master. And see, it's described, it's the guru. Your spiritual master is the revealer of the Dham. So you have to go there as a pilgrim. My dear Guru Maharaj, please bless me that I may actually enter into the holy Dham. You see, whether you go to Mayapur or Vrindavan, same thing. Don't just go as a tourist. You have to pray. If you actually want to enter the Dham, you can only do it by a meditative, prayerful mood. My dear Guru Maharaj, my dear Gurudev, please bless me, I can actually enter into the holy Dham. So if you go in that mood of prayer, it's a very, very powerful means of increasing your Krishna consciousness. In Vrindavan, it is stated that whatever devotional service you do is magnified, the result is magnified 1,000 times. And offenses are also magnified 1,000 times, so you have to be really on your best behavior when you go to Vrindavan. The best, you keep your mind pure, keep your language pure, and keep your activities pure in the holy Vrindavan Dham. Every particle of dust in Vrindavan is more valuable than the treasury of Kuvera, the treasure of the demigods. So you're going in, it appears to be an ordinary Indian town, but actually it's Krishna's transcendental abode manifested here. So, yes, that's also true here, but by going to Vrindavan, you will, and experiencing, actually feeling and tasting the atmosphere of the holy Vrindavan Dham, when you come back here, you'll experience Melbourne Vrindavan in a much deeper way than you did before. It will help you to appreciate more who are Sri Sri Garnitai, who are your beloved Radha Krishna deities. That will all be, what are their names? Radha Balava. You'll be able to more deeply appreciate your beloved Radha Balava and Sri Sri Garnitai, Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra. They'll all become more manifest for you if you can go to the holy Dham and experience the holy Dham. How to choose a spiritual master? If you are very sincere to surrender to Krishna, that my dear Lord, now I want to fully surrender myself unto you, Krishna will reveal to you who your spiritual master is. Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam pativurvakam tadami buddhiyogam tam yenamam apiyanti te. To those who were constantly devoted and worship me with love, note that, with love, I reveal to them how they can come to me. So you just have to worship Krishna with love, and then Krishna will show you, yes, here is your spiritual master. Now you take complete shelter of him. I'm coming from India, and when I see the opposite sex, it disturbs me. That means your vision is lusty vision. When you see the opposite sex, if you're a male, you should see that this is my mother here. Why should you be disturbed if you see your mother? Because, of course, if it's around, he's talking about not in the temple. Oh, I see. He's talking about in the streets of Melbourne, where you have the women walking around half naked. Yeah, it is disturbing. So you have to remember that it's nothing but blood and flesh, like your blood and flesh. As I explained the other day, you have your breast. And the woman has her breast, it may be bigger than yours, why you should be so enamored by it? It's just the blood, it's a breast just like yours. What's the big deal? You have to see it philosophically. Why are you being carried away by the curved hips and the big breasts? It's idiotic. It's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. It's Maya's trick to get us to propagate children, even though it's so austere to propagate children. It's just Maya's trick. Maya is playing this trick on us just to get us to propagate the species, but actually there's nothing there. Your stinky body and her stinky body, it's the same thing. Bad breath, you know, it's all the same. The moochy mouth and the smelly everything. It's, you know, what's the difference? There's no difference. You pass stool, she passes stool. I mean, it's just gross. Why are you imagining, Romeo, Juliet? Come off this illusory platform. Become sober. Can you please describe your favorite pastime from the Krishna book? well, not in detail, but a little I can give. The Kaliya pastime is really, really special, you know. That's a really wonderful. Actually, my favorite one is the Brahma Vimohana Leela. Krishna is, and Brahma steals all the boys and calves, and Krishna goes off looking for them. He can't find them. He comes back, and the boys and calves, actually, the calves were gone. He went looking for them. He came back, and now the boys are gone. You see, Brahma took them all away. That's my favorite pastime. Why do we need to have short hair and clean face? Can't we be unattached from such cleanliness? Actually, a Brahmin means suchi. Shamadamastapasocham. This is one of the qualities of a Brahmin. He's clean. So, for those of us who have shaved our heads, you know how clean it feels. I need to shave mine today, actually. It feels so clean. And it's, Prabhupada actually said we keep ourselves very clean. He was asked by the reporter in the TV show, the interviewer said, why you keep the head shaved? And Prabhupada said, it's for keeping ourselves clean. So it's a very clean thing, a clean face, a clean head, you see. It's very nice for Krishna consciousness. Some devotees now are growing beards, but Prabhupada was against it. He was against growing the mustache. I remember one godbrother who left, fell into Maya. He was having the mustache, and he came for the darshan of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was asking why the mustache. And he said, well, Prabhupada, you had a mustache when you were a householder. Prabhupada said, that was before my diksha. So Prabhupada, I don't know why it's in fashion now among the men. Maybe they're trying to attract women. I don't know. But they're keeping the beards. But Prabhupada was against the beards and the mustaches. So our devotees should read what Prabhupada says in the books about these things and try to please Prabhupada instead of trying to become fashionable. Can you please explain why the universal form of the Lord considered impersonal feature of the Lord? Well, it's not a person. It's like it's a material energy. It's not a person. Can you please explain what is the need of establishing Dharma? 5,000 years ago, on the other side of the Kali Yuga was about to come. Maharaj Parikshit only ruled for a few years. Something doubt is considering the true that no elderly people and teacher will be left to teach the new generations. Actually, we have to establish Dharma. This is our duty. This is Chaitanya's movement. It is to revive the topmost Dharma. The Yuga Dharma is the Sankirtan Yuga in this age. The Kali Yuga became on full force after the departure of Krishna. Maharaj Parikshit held it back briefly, but then he departed also, and it came in even more after that. So as our duty as the followers of Lord Chaitanya to bring the Yuga Dharma back in the Kali Yuga, there's a 10,000 year period when it will actually completely conquer the human society. So we are meant to be instruments in the hands of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for bringing about a massive spiritual revolution as soon as possible on this planet. We should be more we should have a bigger impact than anything else that's happening right now on this planet. What is the significance of ringing the bell during the Bhoga offering? That's you're giving Krishna something wonderful to see, something wonderful to taste, and now a nice sound to hear to please him. Can the heavenly planets be entered by human beings from the earth? Yes, in your next lifetime. If you can qualify yourself to go to the heavenly planets in your next lifetime if you like, but it's not worth it because you still have to come down again to this hellish lower planets after you finish off your pious results, got you to the heavenly planets. Go to the topmost heavenly planet, the spiritual world. That's intelligence. If a person becomes self-realized, will he be subjected to fall down at any time? If so, is the Lord's avidya potency stronger? One who actually becomes fully awakened in Krishna consciousness and regains his original eternal identity in the pastimes of Krishna will never fall again. Somebody who's highly advanced on the pathway, who has not yet achieved the topmost perfection, could fall down. So you got to be careful. Even from the bhava stage, great personalities fell down. So be careful. I want to fully surrender to Krishna and Guru, but I can feel I am still holding on to something, maybe my false ego. How can I get rid of this in this lifetime by becoming fully surrendered to your spiritual master? How can Krishna forget his girlfriends, gopis, and married so many queens? Krishna never forgot any one of his girlfriends, I can tell you right now. He never forgot any of his girlfriends, he never forgot any of his queens. They were always very dear to him. Every single cow also was unforgettable. Every calf, every cow, the peacocks. Every single jiva soul is very dear to Krishna. They're never forgotten by Krishna. He wants all of them back in his abode. Can we be in the mode of goodness when we do material things like play games, buy clothes, etc.? Why do you want to be in the mode of goodness? Why don't you come to the transcendental platform by doing everything for Krishna? Yat karoshi yadishnasi yajjahosi dadasi yat yat tapashashi konteya tat karusha madarpanam. Why do you want to come out of the mode of goodness? Why don't you come to the transcendental platform and do everything for Krishna? What game you want to play? There's only one game worth playing. You know what that game is? It's take over the world for Krishna. That's the game the big boys play. Sankirtan Yajna. Prabhupada gave us this order in Los Angeles. He said, become guru and deliver the whole world. You want to play games? First deliver the whole world, then we'll talk about playing some game. You want to play baseball, football, basketball, volleyball? That's kid stuff. The big boys play this game, deliver the world. They're plotting, scheming, everything they can do. What can I do to be an instrument to deliver this whole planet as soon as possible back to home, back to Godhead? That's the game you got to play if you want to really taste the nectar. Why do some devotees eat chocolate? Because they're loose. Actually, Prabhupada did give a concession to Dhananjaya for eating chocolate. But he also, in other places, he says we should not eat chocolate. It's intoxicant. So, there's a, in one place there's an instruction, don't do it. In another place there's a concession. So, should I take advantage of the concession or not? One could ask. Well, Prabhupada said it's better not to take advantage of concessions. Just like married life is a concession too. Is it better to stay brahmachari or get married? It's better to stay brahmachari if you can pull it off. You're much better off if you can do it. You're much better off, you see. So the best thing is don't eat chocolate. That's the best thing. Why do you... how do you pop the balloons of material desires with the pin of transcendental knowledge? Can you please share the history and significance of your Radha Damodar deities? Well, one day one of our ISKCON sannyasis, His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, was taking a morning walk on Juhu Beach. Huh?
Are these the philosophical question or just the stories in the past time?
These are pastime questions.
It's like a kid's question. We are not yet mature.
Well,
why do we do this? Why do we do that?
There's a whole bunch of pastime questions. It's okay. I'm in the mood of remembering a wonderful pastime. So he was walking down Juhu Beach. It was a very auspicious moment, astrologically speaking. The sun was rising in the east, and the full moon, the moon was visible in the west. It was like an amazing thing, 180 degrees. You got the sun, and the rising sun and the moon over here. It was like a very auspicious moment. And the tide was very far out to sea, not the usual Juhu Beach location of the ocean water. It was very far out to sea, exposing a huge expanse of sand which was not usually visible. And TKG noticed out there something shiny in the sand. He said, he told one of the brahmacharis, Garunga Prabhu, go out there and see what that is. And he came back, it was a deity of Krishna. And so he brought it back to the temple. He put it down, he started to eat his breakfast, and he went, wait a minute. How can I eat? Krishna has been in the ocean for so long, he must be very hungry. He immediately stopped his breakfast and said, okay. He polished the deity, they had a huge, made a huge feast and a nice, there was some singhasan there, and made a nice worship. And then shortly after that, the queen of Udaipur brought a Radharani to match the Krishna that had been found. So, yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful deity. They're on the altar right now. They're little tiny, but you can see them right, they're right under Radharani. Go, after the class, go right up to the, as close as you can get. If you have a, maybe if you have an iPhone or a smartphone that can magnify it, do that. But it's, they're right there under Radharani's lotus feet. Shishi Radhadamanar Kija. Okay. Let's see here. Why do you criticize illicit sex so much? because you're attached to sex life. We all attach to it. That we need to cut free from illicit sex. Actually, illicit sex binds us in this material world. And the fact is that many devotees fall down and have illicit sex. I'll tell you the truth. Many devotees have a problem, even in marriage also. Sex outside of procreation is illicit sex. It will bind you to take birth again. So there's an illicit sex problem in our ISKCON movement. I'll tell you straight. You want to know? I'll tell you the straight truth. There's an illicit sex problem even amongst our initiated devotees. So I do speak about it because we have to clean up our Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, how we can lead the world? If we ourselves don't follow the principles, how we can save the world? It's a joke. So I intensely speak strongly about illicit sex. The eightfold daily pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan. I wish I could describe them. I don't know them right now. That would be a nice thing to learn. There's some daily eightfold pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan. Can you please share your most inspiring preaching experience? My wife is objecting to these kind of questions instead of asking philosophical things. But it's interesting. My most inspiring preaching experience. Wow. There's so many. Now, the thing is, they just keep getting more inspiring and more inspiring and more inspiring as the years go by. It's like coming here to Melbourne. Every time I come, it becomes more inspiring to be here. It really does. Practically every class I give become more inspiring for me. So I guess this class right now, this is my most inspiring experience right now, you think? Right now, that's happening right now. Let's see here. There's one more, and we can wrap it up. I've already given two Vishnujan Swamis. They want another one now, another memory of Vishnujan Swami. I'll give one more. He was an amazing... Prabhupada said that because he is such a nice devotee, he has made many nice devotees. Of course, I'm not one of those nice devotees, but I'm hoping I can be someday a nice devotee. I'm not even a devotee yet, but I'm hoping that someday I can be a devotee and that I can be a nice devotee. But the fact was, he was an extremely nice devotee, very kind, very merciful. I'll give you one little pastime. We were preaching there by the University of Texas. We had a center right by the largest university in the U.S., the University of Texas at Austin, the biggest university in the whole United States. We had a nice preaching center just a few blocks away, but we got invited to go to another campus, which is called, used to be called Southwest Texas State Teachers College or something like that. It was the former president of the United States, Lyndon B. Johnson, attended that school. It was about 80 miles down the road, south on Interstate 35, is it? So anyway, we did a program at that other university on the campus, and we were driving back in the evening, and the sun was setting in the west, and there's hill country just west of San Marcos. There's a hill country, so the hills are there, and the sun is setting. It's a very, like, right out of a movie, you know, the sun is setting in the west over the beautiful hills. And me and Vishnujan Swami are traveling alone. One devotee came with a jeep, a four-wheel drive jeep. When Prabhupada heard about it, he said, yes, that is... They said, Prabhupada, Vishnujan Swami has a jeep. It will go anywhere, a four-wheel drive. Prabhupada said, yes, that is sannyas. It can go anywhere. So... he and I are driving up. I was a singer-songwriter. I wrote 300 songs. I'm really into it. I had fans. You know, I was a musician, and I had some attachments to them. There was one group called the Jefferson Airplane that I really thought was cool. They had one song that was actually a Christian hymn. They stuck it in one of their albums, and I really liked that song. It was called Good Shepherd. It was a song about Jesus, about the mercy of Jesus. I really liked that song. So he knew, he was also in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood before he became a devotee. He personally knew the Jefferson Airplane. You know, he's one of their friends. Before they became a big name, he was jamming with them, and, you know, he's one of the friends of them. And so he was well familiar with the song. In fact, he remembered when it was... One of the members had visited a monastery in the mountains of California one summer, and he came back to San Francisco with this Christian hymn that he had learned at the monastery. So he knew the whole history of how the airplane had put this on their album. So anyway, we're driving down the road, driving back to Austin. He's driving, I'm sitting there in the passenger seat. He found out that I liked that song, and so we sang a duet together. If you want to get to heaven over on the other shore, stay out of the way of the long-tongued liar. Oh, good shepherd, feed my sheep. We're singing that song about Jesus. You know, he's a good shepherd. Feed my sheep means give me your blessings, give me your mercy. I'm like a lost sheep, and you please be kind upon me. So in this way, he really captured me. He took those things it was spiritual, actually. It was a prayer to Lord Jesus begging for his mercy. So it was transcendental, actually, even though the airplane had put it on an album. But he sang it with me, and it was, what devotee would sing a Jefferson Airplane song with some bhakta? You know what I mean? Well, he was a very innovative preacher. He was not as stereotyped, that he has to just do, you know, read some manual and see what he's allowed to do and what he's not allowed to do. He was tuned into the super soul, you see. He was a very intuitive preacher. He would tune in to the time, that moment in time, that place in time in history, and do just what was right to attract someone to Krishna. That was his amazing potency. So I'm just trying to follow in his footsteps now when I preach. I find you really can't prepare the class ahead of time. You have to just go there and see and be with the people and see what is their mood. Pick up on their vibes. What are the vibes of the audience? You just have to connect with the audience and connect them with Krishna, you see. So I learned that from Vishnujan Swami. So we can stop here now, and we thank you all very much for your attendance in today's class. May you be successful on your pathway becoming the pure devotee of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Guru Premanandi.